looked up at him. There were no words to tell him she was crazily, madly in love with him. "I love you," he said. Lana drew back, startled. He'd said the words she'd been about to say. Everything had changed now. Nothing would ever be the same. She stared up at his face, so alive with passion. She suddenly felt ashamed of the anger she'd nursed for so long against anyone or anything German. But thank goodness this man had shown her that there were still honest, decent Germans. "Lana, please say something, even if it's something I do not want to hear."
"I'll love you too."
"That is all I need." He bent his head down and kissed her again, and she clung to him, ripples of pleasure coursing through her body. Breathless, she finally pulled away and tried to smile, but the muscles in her face seemed to have frozen. She felt something trickle down her cheek. Carl kissed her eyelids. "Do not cry, my darling," he whispered. "Everything is going to be all right." He kissed an inch of flesh on her neck, where her scarf had come askew, and then his mouth found hers again, and she gave herself up to him. "We must go back," she said finally. "They'll be wondering what has happened to us."
Carl gave her a wry smile. "I am wondering the same thing."
They didn't speak as they made their way back up the drive, yet Lana was sure Carl was feeling the same turmoil she was experiencing. Now and again she glanced at him, but he was resolutely staring ahead, as though he needed to focus on something ordinary because of the extraordinary things they had just told one another. She badly wanted to keep in close contact with him, but she knew she mustn't reach for his hand with any prying eyes staring at them through the windows as Bingham Hall came in sight. Just as she reached for the bell cord, Carl turned to her and said,
"Lana, never forget what I have told you just now. Whatever happens to us, will you always remember?" His gaze was imploring. He seemed to be uncertain about the outcome of their love.
She tried to brush the idea away. She'd thought the same so many times. There were so many obstacles, and maybe Carl thought there would just be too many to overcome. She wouldn't think about it now. He was only here for a little longer than a day, and she didn't want to spoil the time they had, precious, because it was so short. And Peter must be given the attention he craved from his father. Once inside, they'd have to pretend they'd only been discussing Peter. They must never raise any suspicion with the staff, or even Peter, that there was anything more between them.
"I'll never forget," Lana said softly, as she looked into those dazzling blue eyes.
He quickly pressed her hand and gave a smile, but it was almost perfunctory. Lana's head buzzed. The war was doing terrible things, making people act abnormally, leap to unwise decisions, and say things that perhaps were best left unsaid. She sighed and pulled the cord.
"I'm going to see if Bertie needs any help," she said as they stepped inside. "Maybe I can lay up the tables for supper."
She turned to him. "Would you like to take Peter into the library, where you can spend some time with him on your own?"
"I would like that very much," Carl said.
Lana was delighted to see Reggie carrying trays to and fro from the kitchen to the dining room, actually looking as though he was enjoying himself by the wide grin he gave her, his tie, for once, neatly in place. It had worked out so well. Bertie gave a weekly report to Maxine, who kept Lana updated, and it seemed the cook found him invaluable.
"He's even learned to respect Rupert," Bertie told Lana with a twinkle, when she'd asked if she could do anything to help.
"Well, nobody's going to get the better of Rupert, who's allowed Reggie into his kitchen. But I know he's taken to Rupert, as I've often caught the lad giving him a sneaky piece of meat."
Lana chuckled and picked up the tea towel. "How's he getting on with learning the main courses?"
"He picks it up as though he's been doing it for 2 years instead of 2 weeks," Bertie said,
Quite honestly, I don't know what I'd do without him now.
I'm so glad, Lana said, stacking some plates on the dresser. Everyone at some point or another needs a helping hand.
And how's that Mr. Best? Bertie asked.
Lana warmed just to hear his name and had to sternly remind herself that she must act like a teacher who had merely been giving information to a parent about one of the children.
He said he enjoyed the play very much, she said, as steadily as she could muster.
Bertie shot her a look. And I believe you and he had a quiet walk together afterwards, when the bairns were having a nap.
Lana gave a start. Not much happens that you don't see, Bertie.
Bertie laughed. Oh, I'm just teasing you, hen. But I have to admit, he's a very handsome man.
He must have all the ladies swooning over him in Germany.
Somehow Lana didn't like that image at all. She needed to change the subject, but before she could think of something to direct Bertie's mind in another direction, the cook said, in an unexpectedly serious tone, Lana Pet, be careful.
I don't know what you mean, Lana said, not daring to look at Bertie.
I think you do, hen. I really think you do.
Chapter 36. Bertie's words, which Lana was sure were meant to be a warning not to get too deeply involved with Carl, whirled in her head as she sat at the same table as Carl and Peter, though several feet away on the opposite side. She couldn't help feeling jealous that Athena had placed herself next to him while she was settling the younger children, who were shrieking with excitement that Father Christmas would be here in a few hours' time. Disappointment seeped through her. Once, she saw Carl look her way and catch her eye. Then, so quickly, she wondered if it had really happened, he'd turn to his son again. Bertie had produced a delicious Christmas Eve supper, with ham and egg sandwiches and blancmange and jellies with artificial cream. But Lana had difficulty in swallowing, so conscious was she of Carl. When she dared to steal another glance at him, he didn't seem to be enjoying his meal any more than she was. She wondered if it was for the same reason. Of course not, she told herself irritably. He was too wrapped up in Peter to take much notice of what he was eating. She tried to swallow a small piece of ham, but it felt like a piece of leather sticking in her throat. She didn't know what to do. It wouldn't go down, but she could hardly try to remove it. She began to cough and grabbed her glass of water, feeling Carl's eyes on her. Somehow she managed to swallow the lump of meat. She couldn't go on like this. Not one thought was clear in her mind. Nothing made sense to her. Only that she loved this man. But in her heart she knew it was a forbidden love. Tears stung the backs of her eyes. If she wasn't careful, she would break down. She felt a tear slide from her eye and quickly brushed it away before anyone noticed. She hadn't banked on Carl. He'd seen her action. Even from where she sat, she could tell his eyes too were shining unnaturally. She told herself it was because he was overcome with the deep pleasure of having his son by his side. But her heart told her it wasn't only that. Her mouth became dry. She swallowed. It made no difference. She couldn't stay at the table a moment longer. She put both her hands on the table to push herself upright. She saw Carl glance at her again, but she carefully kept her face averted. Is everything all right, Lana? It was Athena, looking concerned. I'm feeling a little under the weather. I didn't sleep much last night, but I'll be okay. Are you sure? Do you want me to come with you? Now Athena and Carl were both staring at her. Her heart began to race. She had to get away. No, really, Athena, it's a bit of a headache. I'll have a lie down for a while. Shall I send for Dolores?
No, Lana said. Nurse Dolores was the last person she wanted fussing round. Honestly, I'll be all right.
If you're sure. Athena went back to her meal, and Carl.
Feeling she would pass out at any moment, Lana managed to stumble from the dining room. She put her hand out to steady herself on the hall panelling. Her heart was thumping. Maybe she'd take a cup of tea to her room, and Bertie might find her a couple of biscuits.
but only Reggie and Ethel were in the kitchen. "Have the others already finished?" Reggie asked with a surprised tone when she entered the room.
"No, they're still in the middle of eating. I have a headache, so I thought I'd make a cup of tea and take an aspirin."
"You look white as a sheet, miss," Ethel said, folding the tea towel over the oven rail and standing in front of her.
"I'll put the kettle on. You go on upstairs and I'll bring it up to you. You look right done in, miss, if I may say so."
That was exactly how she felt. Right done in.
Lying on the bed, drifting a little, she reprimanded herself for getting worked up. At this rate, she'd make herself ill. Pulling herself off the bed, she went to the sink and splashed her face with cold water, then grimaced. She looked awful. Her eyes were hazy, her hair awry. She unpinned it and let it loose. It was Christmas Eve, after all. Then she dabbed a little powder on her nose and touched her lips with nearly the last of her precious lipstick. Goodness knew when she'd be able to find another one in the shops. Things were becoming scarcer by the day. She made herself smile in the mirror and breathed out a sigh that steamed up the glass. Just as well. She pulled the bedroom door behind her and walked downstairs, almost bumping into Carl and Peter, who were making their way with the other children to the library for Christmas carols.
"You are not well, Lana?"
His voice was deliberately low.
"It was just a headache. It's nearly gone now," she added, untruthfully.
"Then will you come and sit by Peter and me?"
She nodded. Charlie and Harold had set the tree in one corner of the library, but well away from the walls, so the children could walk round it and admire their efforts. It looked magnificent, lit with dozens of candles and coloured balls the villagers had given them over the years. The tree glowed, throwing a magical light onto everyone in the room. Athena was at the piano, flipping over the music book propped in front of her. Lana spotted four seats at the back, which she preferred. She led the way over, Carl and Peter following, and Peter talking 19 to the dozen with his father. A warm feeling stole round Lana's heart. Little Peter was happier and more contented-looking than she had ever seen him. Carl sat down with Peter on his left, and Lana took the seat on his right. Where was Priscilla? Lana stood up and looked round before she saw her in the doorway looking wildly for a seat. She gestured for her to join them, and the child gave a relieved smile as she made her way to the last empty seat on Lana's right. Maxine stood and announced that there would be carols, and that if any child would like to sing a carol on their own, to please tell her. No one volunteered. Lana turned to Priscilla.
"Why don't you sing Once in Royal David City, and we'll all join in on the second verse?"
Priscilla looked doubtful.
"Come on, Priscilla, we'd love to hear it."
Priscilla nodded and stood up. As in the play, her voice soared to the top notes effortlessly, like an angel's. The children sang a few more carols with the adults, and Maxine made further announcements about the plans for the following day.
"We shall have Christmas service in our chapel," she said, "and then we have the present opening afterwards."
Doris and Daisy hugged one another in anticipation, and Maxine smiled. To Lana's surprise, Carl rose to his feet.
"May I say a word?" he said.
His presence was so strong that everyone became silent again.
"I would like to thank Matron for inviting me to Bingham Hall, so I could see my son, Peter, this Christmas. You do not know how much it means to me that you have made me feel welcome."
He turned this way and that, smiling.
"And now Peter and I would like to sing for you, O Tannenbaum. The Tannenbaum is a fir tree bringing peace on earth."
Lana didn't understand the words, but the tune was familiar. Carl's voice was rich and confident, giving her goose pimples. As though he knew, Carl brushed his hand against hers when he sat down. It set her pulse racing. There was a silence, and then the children clapped, harder than they ever had. It was just the perfect ending. "That was wonderful, Mr. Best," Maxine said, smiling and glancing at Peter.
"And you, Peter. We all enjoyed it very much. And now I would like to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, they all called to one another. Merry Christmas.
Lana noticed that only Priscilla kept her lips firmly pressed together, her hands still clasped in her lap.
Would you like to come to the common room with us, Carl? Maxine said after the children had disappeared to get ready for bed. Athena and Barbara are staying on, and Kathleen, one of our nurses, who for once isn't on night duty. I thought we'd have a sherry and a chat, if that appeals.
Don't turn down the offer of a sherry, Carl, Athena laughed. It happens so rarely at Bingham Hall.
I'll drink to that, Barbara said, chuckling.
Lana?
Carl turned to her, catching her unawares.
It was the first time he'd said her name in front of others, and she desperately hoped no one had noticed. But Maxine had called him Carl.
It was Christmas, after all, and it seemed ridiculous with a war on if you had to keep within such boundaries.
Do you feel well enough? He asked quietly.
Yes, that would be lovely.
Did she mind that the others would be curious about this German and why he was here?
That is very kind of you, Carl said, giving the matron a smile. I would like that very much, if I'm not in the way.
You're not in the way at all, Maxine said, smiling back. We'll be delighted to have you. I'm afraid you'll be the only man here, but if you can bear it, I'll go and get the sherry and some glasses.
Please let me help you with them, Carl said.
Thank you, Maxine said. You can come with me to the dining room, where we keep anything resembling alcohol under lock and key, she added, smiling.
Lana's eyes lingered as Carl followed Maxine out of the library. She couldn't believe he'd told her he loved her only a few hours ago. Did she believe him?
Of course she did. A serious man like Carl would never give his love lightly.
Her stomach in knots, she forced herself to help Athena and Barbara to arrange the chairs in a group, trying to concentrate on their chatter, hoping they didn't expect anything from her. To her ears, their words were meaningless, and she couldn't have added anything sensible if she'd wanted to. It wasn't long before Maxine and Carl returned with the sherry and glasses, some crackers and small squares of cheese. Even though she wasn't much of a drinker, Lana couldn't wait to take some sips of the sherry, thinking it would help to dispel her nerves. Carl poured her a glass and handed it to her. She noticed his hand tremble very slightly, which didn't do anything to help calm the turmoil inside her. She couldn't resist gazing up at him. His eyes pierced hers, and he seemed to understand, though he kept his expression neutral. He turned to finish pouring glasses for the others, and soon the six of them were relaxing in their armchairs and savouring the taste. Lana relished the warmth of the liquid as it slid down the back of her throat.
"Cheers, everyone," Maxine said, smiling round at the group, "and a very happy Christmas."
"Happy Christmas,"
they raised their glasses.
Lana took another sip. She noticed Carl simply hold his glass up and repeat the words, but he didn't put it to his lips.
"The last few hours before it becomes a madhouse," Kathleen said with feeling. She looked at the staff. "Who was filling the stockings this evening?"
"I've put Lana down for it," Maxine said with a grin. "She's not had that pleasure yet."
"Do you want me to help?" Athena said.
Lana was about to open her mouth and say she'd be delighted when she caught Carl's eye.
"May I help Lana instead?" he said, directing his attention to Maxine. "It is a long time since I have had my son at Christmas."
Lana's heart missed a beat. This was becoming a complicated situation, and Maxine might read far more into it than she should. But the matron merely said, "If it's all right with Lana."
"It's all right with me," Lana said, grateful that she managed to get the words out without stuttering. "Where will I find everything to be given out?"
"All their treats are in boxes in the pantry on one of the back shelves," Maxine said. "Give them one of everything. The toys are already wrapped and labelled with their names."
Lana nodded. "OK, what time should we start?"
"Leave it until 11, Barbara said, "to make sure they're well and truly in the land of Nod." She took the last swallow of her sherry. "Oh, that was nice," she said, in a regretful tone. "I could be tempted with another one, but I'm not going to." She looked at Lana. "Actually, it's a lot of fun sneaking around, and then when one of the kids wakes up trying to fool them that you're nothing to do with Father Christmas,
she broke off with a chuckle. They talked until 10:30, when Athena and Kathleen began to yawn.
I'm calling it a day, Athena said, rising to her feet.
Me too, Kathleen said, putting her empty glass back on the tray. My day started off with a weekly NITS inspection, not my favourite duty. Nor the children's, judging by their shrieks and moans. She chuckled. What about you, Barbara?
Yes, I've had enough for one day with all those costume alterations. But I must congratulate the two of you on a great play with very catchy tunes. It went really well, and the audience thoroughly enjoyed it.
I think they did, Lana said happily. A few of them were singing along once they'd caught the melody.
I enjoyed it too, very much, Carl said. It was a privilege to see.
5 minutes later, the four women had said their goodnights and Lana and Carl were alone.
I hope it does not sound rude, but I thought they would never go, he said.
Lana smiled. I was thinking exactly the same. They chatted a while, mostly about Peter. Then Carl held out his hand.
Shall we go then?
She nodded, and he gently pulled her to his feet. They found the boxes of treats and toys, and carrying two apiece, they made their way to the second floor where the dormitories were.
"Shall we do the girls first?" Lana whispered. "Give the boys a bit longer to settle."
Carl nodded and followed her as she carefully turned the handle to the girls' room. Inside, all was silence. The two of them crept round the beds, filling the stockings with the rare treat of an orange, an apple, a soft teddy for Nora, a colouring book and crayons for the twins, Daisy and Doris, a lined notebook and decorated pencil for Pamela, for Betsy a mouth organ. She'd seen one of the boys, Harvey, play one, and had made a loud wish that she'd like one too. A rag doll with a china face for Megan.
"Last one is Priscilla," Lana whispered. "She's got two handkerchiefs from the home, but I've added a bracelet she said she liked when she saw me wearing it once. It was actually when I took her and Peter to meet you that time."
She broke off, a little embarrassed. She caught Carl's eye on her.
"And as she's the eldest, I felt she should have something more grown up," she added, trying to hide her confusion.
I think that is good."
Carl tipped a few boiled sweets into the stocking, then went round to place a few in the other girls' stockings.
"I think that's it," Lana said. "Let's go and do the older boys' dorm and finish with the younger ones where Peter is."
20 minutes later, they were filling Peter's stocking. Lana couldn't take her eyes off the way Carl was looking at his son. It seemed to her there was regret, sadness, joy, and a whole range of emotions flitting across his face. As he bent to kiss the sleeping child, Peter's eyelids fluttered open, and he stared up at his father.
"Papa?"
"Shh."
Carl put a finger to his lips.
"We must not wake the others." "Are you Father Christmas?"
"Just this once," Carl whispered. "But you must not tell the other children. Der Weihnachtsmann had so much to do tonight, I offered to help."
"You don't need to tell me fairy stories," Peter whispered back. "I stopped believing in Father Christmas when I went to stay with Grandma. She told me he wasn't real."
Carl turned and gave Lana a shrug. She had to bite her lip to stop the giggle that threatened.
"I didn't realise how grown up you are now, Peter," he said softly. "And I'm very proud of you. But now it's time for you to close your eyes and go back to sleep."
He kissed him on the forehead, then nodded for Lana to go to the next bed. What a lovely father he was, Lana thought. He must have been heartbroken, having to say goodbye to both his wife and his son, then having to keep his wits about him as he tried to steal information he knew the British would find invaluable. He must be working in a pressured environment, strongly believing that right would prevail. Yet the war was still raging. Even worse in the Far East, where she couldn't begin to imagine what conditions the soldiers were living in. She shuddered.
"Lana?"
He whispered her name, and a quiver zigzagged through her body.
"Is this young man the last?"
"Yes, it's Alan. Let's fill his stocking quickly and go."
"Don't fall over, Rupert," Lana warned when they were about to climb the next flight. The cat was curled up in a ball on the landing, his favourite sleeping place, near Priscilla if he couldn't sneak onto her bed. No, I won't. On the third floor landing, Lana stopped. They were standing close together now. He was looking at her with a question in his eyes, the brightest blue she'd ever seen. Her own eyes dropped to his mouth, lips that had kissed her deeply only hours ago. She wanted to kiss him again, to never stop. Her breath came in short, jerky gasps. He drew her into the circle of his arms. Lana, how is it possible you are so beautiful? He held her away from him and his eyes roved over her face. She tried to laugh it off, but he stopped her. You are beautiful. I would love to spend the rest of the night with you, but it is not possible here.
No, it isn't, Lana said. I think we'd better say good night before we regret something.
She didn't know how she stopped him from kissing her, but she knew if she let him, it would be fatal. One kiss and she would allow him to lead her to his bedroom. She fought for control, hating to see the disappointment in his eyes, which only seconds before had held desire. He hesitated. Then I will say good night, Lana.
Good night, Carl.
She watched as he went up the last flight of stairs, and when she heard his door click, she unlocked her bedroom door. Once in bed, she could only think of him. Would he be cleaning his teeth at this moment, folding his clothes neatly, or would he already be in bed? If so, was he thinking of her as she was of him? A wave of longing swept over her, a longing so powerful that she was thankful she was lying down. She was 31, for goodness sake. She'd lived with a man when in her 20s. She'd become engaged to Dickie and they hadn't waited because of the war. So what was the point now to say no to Carl when they loved one another? And who knew what was in store with the war going on and on? Who would know if she crept up the last flight of stairs to his room? Chapter 37. She'd forgotten how every step creaked on that last flight of stairs. She forced herself to breathe in slowly to calm her racing heart as she climbed the last few steps to the fourth landing, his floor. She was outside his door. Would he be asleep? Or would he, at this moment, be wondering if she would come to him? She listened for any sounds coming from the maids' rooms. She thought she could hear him breathing, regularly, as in sleep, but maybe it was her imagination. If one of the maids came out of her room right now, she didn't know what excuse she'd make. Whatever she said, the maid would know differently. She would know exactly what Lana was up to, but all was quiet. She tapped on the door and waited, biting her lip. She knocked again, a fraction louder.
Carl, are you awake?
Her voice was barely above a whisper, but he'd hear her if he wasn't asleep, she was sure. She waited a full minute, her heart beating loudly in her ears, still thinking he might come to the door, but there was no sound within. She tightened her fist and raised it once again. She'd knock much louder this time. He would surely hear it and come to her. But just as her knuckles almost hit the door, she let her hand fall, tears springing to her eyes. Carl had made the decision for her. If he hadn't heard her, if he'd been fast asleep, then he'd made it inadvertently. But if he had heard her, he was pretending not to have done. He was being the gentleman, protecting her reputation. She was certain he knew she was standing there. She was now just as certain that he had made the right decision. Her knees shook. Her whole body trembled with desire and misery. Gripping hold of the banister to stop herself from pitching forward, Lana crept back down the stairs and into her room. She huddled down into the bed, still warm from the imprint of her body. Gratefully, she pulled the blanket up a little further, thankful no one would be any the wiser to her rashness. She lay awake for some minutes, turning one way and then the other, heat rising in her face as she thought how utterly foolish she'd been. Whatever would he think of her? She was finally drifting off when there was a thundering at her door. She shot up in bed, heart hammering. Surely not Carl. Unless there was another fire. Dear God! Jumping out of bed, she flung open the door. Priscilla burst in.
Miss Ashwin! Oh, Miss Ashwin, please help me!
Tears were pouring down her face, and she was clutching her stomach. Alarmed, Lana took hold of the trembling girl. Come and sit down, love. She sat her on the edge of the bed. Priscilla's eyes were wide with fear. Now tell me what's the matter.
I'm dying.
Of course you're not. What makes you say that? Silently, Priscilla opened her clenched fist to show Lana a bloodied handkerchief.
I'm bleeding to death, she choked. And my tummy. I've got the most awful pains. Please help me.
She began to sob. Dear God, hadn't Maxine told the child about her impending monthlies, or one of the other nurses? She supposed they'd thought Priscilla wasn't old enough yet to learn about the facts of life, but someone should at least have warned her about the changes that would soon occur in her body. Lana sighed and quickly found Priscilla a spare pair of knickers and a Kotex. You're not going to die, love. The bleeding is normal, and you need to wear this to catch it. Put it in these knickers. She handed them to Priscilla, who looked at the towel with doubt, then turned her back to Lana and did what she was told. It happens to me every month, Lana explained. It happens to all women every month. Priscilla stopped crying. She was hunched over, holding her stomach.
I don't understand.
Lana swallowed. How far should she go in explaining? Better not go into too much detail so as not to alarm the girl, who, in spite of starting her monthlies, was still a child in many ways. Blow your nose, then listen to what I have to tell you, but say nothing to the other girls. They're too young to understand. Their turn will come one day, but tonight, on Christmas Eve, you've become a woman. I'm going downstairs to make you a cup of warm milk and honey, Lana told Priscilla, after she'd explained to the astonished girl about this new development in her body and had given her an aspirin. It was dark as a dungeon as she gingerly made her way down the stairs. She stood on something. There was an angry meow and a loud hiss, then a streak of ginger brushed past her down the stairs with the speed of an arrow. Poor Rupert, she must have trodden on his tail. She hurried after him to the kitchen. Switching on the light, she found the cat with his back to her, licking his front paw and methodically washing his face. Kneeling down, she stroked him. I'm sorry, Rupert. I didn't see you. It was so dark. Rupert allowed her to apologise and stroke him until he began to purr. After pouring some milk into his saucer, she put the rest in a small saucepan and heated it up. When the drink was ready, she glanced at Rupert and smiled. He was stretched out on his back in the middle of the kitchen floor, fast asleep. But as she turned to switch out the light, she banged her thigh hard on the corner of the pine table. Wincing with pain, she almost overbalanced, and the milk slopped into the saucer. Cursing under her breath, was this night ever coming to an end? She grabbed a dishcloth and wiped the saucer dry, then shut the door behind her. She'd tell Maxine in the morning about Priscilla and ask if it was possible for her, now she'd started her monthlies, to have her own room for privacy. If Maxine could find somewhere for her, she was sure it would more than make up for Priscilla's scare. Only when Priscilla was safely tucked up in her own bed and Lana had returned to her bedroom did a terrible thought strike her. What if Carl had answered her knock? What if they'd been in bed together when the terrified girl was trying to reach her for help? She would have gone all over the house searching for her, maybe even raising the alarm. Lana shivered. It was too awful to contemplate. She thanked her lucky stars that Carl had had enough wisdom and common sense for both of them. The following morning, Lana opened her eyes, gritty through lack of sleep. The top of her leg felt sore. Probably the bruise had already come out. She lay there, not wanting to move, not wanting to face the day or Carl. A shudder of guilt swept over her as she recalled last night. How she'd sneaked upstairs, the only thing on her mind being to wrap herself in Carl's arms, to spend the night with him. As Lana talked herself into getting out of bed, she inspected her leg. Yes, there was a big purple bruise, her punishment. Carl hadn't shown up for breakfast. Maybe he was taking advantage of not having to get up early to work, having a lie-in. But she knew that wasn't the reason. He was a man of discipline, routine. Should she go to his room, perfectly legitimately this time, and make sure he was all right? As she was turning to go back upstairs, he hurried down the main staircase, a look of concern on his handsome face. Her heart turned over. Ah, Lana, there you are. There's still some porridge and toast, Lana greeted him, desperate to appear normal. But it's pretty noisy in there, with the children shouting about the toys they were given, and the little extras in their stockings. Have you seen Peter? Yes, he wondered where you were. I was writing you a letter. Lana looked at him. He had such a serious expression. She felt alarmed. Why are you writing to me when you're here? He shook his head. To explain, or try to. A small group of children passed between them, shoving and giggling, clutching their presents tight to their chest, as though they would never let them go. Bobby stopped for a moment and turned his head over his shoulder to stare at them. Lana frowned and flicked her hand. The boy sniggered, but followed the others into the dining room. A boy rushed into the hall.
Papa, where have you been? You were supposed to come and sit next to me for breakfast.
I'm sorry, Peter. I expect I was tired from helping the Weihnachtsmann last night. He gave his son a wink.
But I told you he's not...
Peter? Carl put a hand to his lips, not another word. If the children want to believe in magic, you must allow them to do so. He caught Lana's eye. Sometimes magic does happen, when you do not even know it is a possibility. Lana flushed.
Why don't you let Peter take you back to the dining room and at least have some toast and tea, and then you can spend as much of the day as possible with him? Can we, Papa?
I'd like that very much. Carl caught Lana's eye. Shall we all go for a walk later?
I think it should just be you and Peter, Lana said, knowing she'd said the right thing, when Peter's face broke into a beam as he looked up at his father.
All through the day, there never seemed to be a chance when she could see Carl alone, not even for half an hour. Because the children were on holiday, they seemed to be everywhere in the building, including the library, which most of them normally hardly ever bothered about. Finally, Lana asked Maxine if it might be possible for her and Carl to talk in the chapel after the children's service in the afternoon. Harvey, who played the mouth organ, had asked Peter if he would help him do a jigsaw puzzle, and the two children went off together, Harvey talking non-stop.
You'd never see that when the fierce one was in charge, Kathleen said, laughing as she came out of Maxine's office and watched them.
She sounded a right dragon, Lana said with feeling.
She was a dragon all right, Kathleen said. Beats me why she wanted to be in charge of an orphanage. I think it was for the power. She made it quite plain she couldn't stand the children. Most of them were scared of her. We all cheered when she left and June Lavender took over.
The afternoon couldn't come quick enough for Lana. The children had decorated the chapel to look quite festive, setting sprays of artificial flowers and silvered cones and real holly and mistletoe at the altar. Carl arrived only a minute after her. He must have been waiting for her to appear, Lana thought, feeling a little light-headed.
I have a gift for you.
He took from his jacket pocket a small flat box.
Oh, you shouldn't have. I didn't get you anything.
I didn't expect anything.
Carl gave her a smile and handed it to her.
Please, open it.
She took the box and lifted the lid. Something wrapped in tissue paper. She took it out of the box and laid it in her palm. It was a pearl bracelet.
Carl, I can't take this.
Of course you can. I want you to have it. You are missing a bracelet.
She looked at him, puzzled.
You told me you gave your bracelet to Priscilla for her Christmas present. so this is in its place." The pearls gleamed up at her in the soft light from the stained glass windows.
"You didn't buy this specially."
He shook his head. "I wish I had, but there is no time to do shopping in this new life of mine. No, the bracelet belonged to my wife. I bought it for her on our wedding day. It was a set."
"It's far too precious to give away," she murmured, running her fingertips over it.
"Lana, I do not give this without thinking. You are now precious to me. The bracelet does not mean anything sitting in a metal box. If I know you wear it sometimes, then I know you are thinking of me. And now," Carl pressed her hand, "will you allow me to put it on?" She nodded. What else could she say? It easily slipped over her slim wrist, and he clicked the safety clasp.
"It's so beautiful."
"Not nearly so beautiful as you." His eyes were fixed on hers. "Liebling, you came to my door last night." He said it as a simple statement.
"Yes, I did," she whispered.
"You do not know how very much I wanted to open that door, but I knew it would be wrong, and later you would regret it."
"I know."
Lana dropped her eyes.
He cupped a hand under her chin, tilting her face towards him again.
"Lana, my darling, when this war is over, I want us to be married. I want you to be my wife and a mother to Peter."
"I don't know what Peter would say about it," she said.
"He's fond of you already." Carl kissed her forehead. "And he will come to love you."
"But he'll need you to himself," she said. "He's missed you for half his life. He's lost everything with his mother and then his grandmother. And not hearing anything from you for a year or more, not knowing if you were dead or alive. I can't barge in and take over like that."
"Give him time, Lana. The war is not ending yet, but it is turning in favour of the Allies. They will win, I am certain. And when it happens, I want you to be by my side." She couldn't answer. Her mind whirled. It was all too soon. But there was one very important question she needed to ask him.
"Would you like another child one day?"
Carl's face clouded. "It would be a miracle for us to have a baby. But this is not a nice world for children. I think we will have enough to do to give Peter the love he has missed these last years, don't you?" Lana nodded, but it wasn't the answer she was hoping for. She fingered the pearl bracelet, her heart torn. "Kiss me, Lana." He lowered his head, and she felt the touch of his lips. The door clicked open.
"Papa!"
Guiltily, she drew back. "You have forgotten to knock before coming into a room," Carl said in a firm tone. Peter's face fell as he entered the room.
"I wanted you to see the jigsaw Harvey and me have done."
"Harvey and I," Lana automatically corrected, holding up her hand, the bracelet slipping back a little with the movement.
"Harvey and I?"
Peter repeated impatiently, glancing at Lana. Then he looked down. Too late, she tried to hide her hand.
"That's my mother's. Why are you wearing her bracelet?"
The boy's face was red with accusation. "Peter!" Carl reached out his arm, but Peter burst into tears and rushed from the room. "Wait here, Lana. I will go to him. Explain."
"There's no need, Carl. We both know this can't go on. Every moment is precious to him. It isn't fair for me to take you away, even if it's only a few minutes here, an hour there, which is all it can be."
She didn't know how she managed to keep her voice steady. Carl caught hold of her arm and pulled her up, then held her close. "Don't say any more," he said. "Don't speak. I can't bear it. Just when I think I have found some happiness, you want us not to see each other?" He looked down at her. "I thought we have a future together after this evil war." She shook her head.
"Carl, nothing changes the fact that I'm English and you are German. You wouldn't want to live permanently in England."
"Nein, of course not. I want to help rebuild my country. It's where I belong when we have purged this terrible regime." He kissed her forehead. "And you will be by my side."
"No."
Without warning, her temper flared. He was taking it for granted that she would give up her country without even a discussion. He wasn't interested in her feelings, her concerns.
No, Carl, I couldn't do that. Being away from my family, I don't speak or understand the language. I'd be treated suspiciously by some people.
No, only the stupid ones.
It's not just me. It's Peter.
And you will make him a wonderful mother.
No. He sees me as a threat now when he saw you kissing me and then his mother's bracelet on my arm. There's a huge hole in his life and only you can fill it. I will always do my best by him until the war's over, but I can't promise anything more.
She looked at him.
Carl, please say you understand.
I don't understand.
If we love each other, don't say another word.
She touched his lips with her fingertips. Would this make you change your mind? He'd never kissed her so passionately, so urgently. Her senses reeled. Her knees trembled. She clung on. If she hadn't, she'd have fallen backwards like a rag doll. And then with all the willpower she had, she pulled away and said, "Go to him, Carl. He needs you so badly." Carl set his mouth in a determined line and without another word walked out of the chapel, leaving Lana drained of all emotion and alone. Chapter 38. Lana never knew how she got through Christmas Day, trying to be cheerful and enthusiastic in front of the children. But she couldn't bring herself to go to the chapel for the service and sit in the very place where she'd hinted that anything between her and Carl was doomed. She knew Carl had understood the real meaning behind her words. The worst part was when she saw Peter in the great hall after dinner as he was leaving to go for a walk with his father. Carl didn't even look her way, but Peter did. He shot her such a look of anger and resentment, it was clear she wasn't welcome to go anywhere near them. She longed to tell Peter he had his papa to himself now, but of course she couldn't. She could only stand and watch as Peter turned his back and put his hand in his papa's just as Charlie opened the oak door to let them out of the front door. She busied herself in the kitchen in silence, helping Bertie and Reggie to prepare the supper. In her heart, she knew Maxine could probably do with her support with the children's games, but she didn't want to talk to anyone. Bertie threw some curious glances at her. Reggie simply got on with the preparations, only speaking to Bertie when he had a question or wanted to stop for a bite to eat. The afternoon dragged into the evening. The children were worn out with games and extra food and the excitement of their toys. Somehow, Lana managed to dredge up the energy to help Dolores with their bath time and finally get them into bed. She was grateful the nurse was not a particularly talkative woman and her practical manner was a comfort. "Right, I think we've got them all settled," Dolores said as they closed the younger boy's dormitory door. "Do you fancy a sherry in the common room, Lana? I think we're all going to meet in there for some adult Christmas cheer."
"I have a blinding headache," Lana said.
It was true. She'd had very little to eat and drink all day, and she was beginning to feel light-headed again. "Maybe you should go to bed early with a couple of aspirins," Dolores said.
"I think I'll take your advice, Nurse Dolores.
You go on up and I'll bring the aspirins to you."
"Oh, please don't worry," Lana said. "I'll probably fall asleep straight away."
"If you're sure."
"I am, but thank you for being so kind."
She had to turn away. It would provoke a lot of questions if Dolores saw that she was on the verge of breaking down.
"Would you tell the others for me and give my apologies?"
"Of course I will." Dolores hesitated.
"This might not be the right thing to say, but I wish you a happy Christmas."
"Thanks, Dolores. I wish you the same." Lana slipped between the sheets, Dolores's happy Christmas sounding in her ears, as she fell into an exhausted sleep. Somewhat revived the next morning, Lana was determined not to let whatever had taken place between her and Carl turn into a quarrel.
She knew he loved her and she loved him. Above all, she desperately wanted him not to leave Bingham Hall, angry or upset with her.
"Can you take Carl to the station this morning, Lana?" Maxine said, as she hurried by to her office after breakfast. "Harold's not back until the day after tomorrow."
"Yes, of course," Lana hesitated. "Maxine, do you think Peter should come as well to see his father off?"
Maxine frowned. "No, I don't think he should," she said finally. "It will upset him all over again. I think he should say goodbye to him from here."
Lana nodded. At least it would give her a chance to put things right.
"He needs to catch the 9:40, so I'd leave here at 9. I'll tell him to be ready then.
That should give you plenty of time to get to Liverpool. The road should be quiet as it's Boxing Day."
She was ready in the Great Hall at 9:10. Carl came down the stairs carrying his overnight bag when Peter spotted him and flung his arms around him.
"I don't want you to go, Papa. Why do you have to go?"
"I don't want to either, but I must." His eyes fell on Lana for an instant before he turned again to his son. "I have a lot of work to do, so the war will end soon. And you," he looked down at Peter, "must be a good boy and do your lessons, especially your German." He kissed the top of Peter's head. "And you don't forget to write to your papa." Peter shook his head, a tear running down one of his cheeks. The doorbell rang, and for something to do, Lana opened it. Her mouth fell open. Frank stood there with a wide grin on his face. "Aren't you going to invite me in?" With burning cheeks, Lana stood back while Frank came in, removing his cap. He put a small packet, wrapped in brown paper, into her hands.
"It's a little something for you," he said, his eyes twinkling. "I'm sorry I didn't make it yesterday, but there was an emergency with several sheep at one of the neighbouring farms. I think they've picked up something. I was there hours. I hope you'll forgive me."
Lana didn't need to look at Carl. She felt him stiffen, even though he was several feet away. Frank had obviously not noticed him, as a group of children had suddenly rushed through the hall.
"Cat got your tongue," Frank chuckled.
"I'm sorry, I can't stop Frank," Lana said, feeling highly awkward and embarrassed. She mustn't let Frank realise Carl was someone special.
"This is Carl Best, young Peter's father."
She turned to Carl, who seemed to be watching her every move.
"Mr Best, this is Frank Drummond, our local vet, where Rupert, our lovely cat, came from."
She knew she was gabbling, but she couldn't stop herself.
"Why am I feeling so guilty?" she thought crossly.
The two men shook hands, eyeing each other and murmuring they were pleased to meet. She drew a breath.
"I'm taking Mr. Best to the station. In fact, we have to leave right now or he'll miss his train."
The sooner they both left, the better she'd feel. "I've only just dropped by to wish Lana a belated happy Christmas," Frank told Carl. "But I'm passing the station on the way to friends, so I'd be glad to give you a lift." Before Lana could answer that it was no trouble at all for her, Carl said, "That would be most kind, Mr. Drummond. Thank you." As though he couldn't bear to be alone with her. Carl turned to Lana. "It was nice to see you again, Miss Ashwin. Thank you for your kind hospitality and for continuing to look after Peter." His voice was crisp. She put her hand out, and Carl took it in his own firm one. But instead of it feeling warm, his skin was cool. She dared to raise her eyes to his and stared into them. She was met with a carefully neutral expression, and she half stumbled backwards, but he held on to her hand.
"It was a pleasure."
Her voice trembled.
Was it her imagination, or did he give her hand the slightest squeeze before he dropped it and abruptly turned away?
"Papa!"
Peter rushed after his father, and Lana was thankful to see Carl break into a smile.
"Can I come to the station to say goodbye?"
"I'm afraid not, Peter," Lana intervened. "Mr. Drummond would have to come all the way back with you, and I'm sure he has a busy day ahead helping the sick animals."
She shook her head at Frank, who seemed to have lost his usual cheerful demeanour and was standing by, watching her closely. Peter's face fell.
"We'd better go," Frank said, putting his cap back on and turning to Peter. I wouldn't want your father to miss his train."
The two men left. She felt as though somehow she'd lost control of the situation. And then it struck her. "I wouldn't want your father to miss his train." Did Frank sense something between Carl and her? But how could he? All they'd done was shake hands in a formal manner and address each other using their surnames. How could that possibly raise any suspicion? She could only hope that Carl would be circumspect on the way to the station. She wouldn't want to hurt Frank for the world. Chapter 39. January 1944. New Year passed, and Lana hadn't heard a word from Frank. She'd written a note to thank him for the sweet little enamel brooch in the shape of a cat he'd left her on Boxing Day. The cat was exactly the colour of Rupert, and she'd immediately pinned it onto her dress to the children's delight. Another fortnight dragged by. She had a brief note from Carl, but he made no mention of their future, and for that she was glad. She responded in the same way, telling him about Peter and how good he was becoming at drawing. And he was now attending the village school twice a week for science, taught by Mr. Benton, the returned headmaster. On these 2 days, Peter usually walked there with Priscilla. "Priscilla told me they nearly always speak in German," Lana finished in her letter to him. "She says it's their secret. I'm so pleased they've formed a strong friendship. Two children who both felt outsiders are doing so well now at school. I'm really proud of them." Lana threw herself into teaching, thankful she was doing something she loved. But her heart ached whenever she thought of Carl and how he must be feeling. She wished now she hadn't told him she loved him. Not that she'd stopped loving him, but it would make things more difficult if he ever brought up the question again of any future together. February brought the usual chill winds and cold rain. But towards the end of the month, there was a snowstorm. Aware of a strange silence one morning, Lana pulled back her curtains to reveal a fairy tale scene. It really was quite breathtaking. And then her mind flew to Frank. He was not the best driver in fair weather, so what on earth would he be like when it was knee-deep in snow? And if it froze tonight, the roads would be slick with ice. He'd still made no contact at all. She knew he was always overstretched, having let his young assistant go into the forces. But before, he'd always made time to keep in contact with her regularly. She had to admit she missed him. Missed his cheerful smile, his enthusiasm, his love for the animals under his care. There were bound to be more emergencies in this weather. She might have a word with Maxine, ask if she would allow her to take Harold's car and go and see him, make sure he was all right, had enough food in. She should have checked before. "Yes, of course you can," Maxine said, her expression concerned when Lana explained the situation. "Just arrange it with Harold." That afternoon, after class, she drove cautiously down the drive, the windscreen wipers working